now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh no,
how would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Well, Alex, that was another belting European weekend.
It certainly was. That's Owen Slott. He's back from the Ricoh Arena.
And that's Alex Lowe, and he went to watch live rugby rather than live music this weekend.
Well, kind of, but Saracens were like a great rock band who've suddenly rediscovered their rhythm.
Nice play on words, Alex.
Well, you would say that, Owen, wouldn't you? You wrote them.
Indeed I did. In a special new breakthrough on the Ruck this week...
we've got a script.
Where one of us says something...
and the other one follows.
And it sounds spontaneous, like it's a grown-up news programme.
Or a piece of Tom Stoppard dialogue.
Or a Scarlet's move, where the momentum just never dies.
Until they've swept end-to-end, and finally...
magnificently...
qualified for the European quarterfinals for the first time in... how many years? 11 years? Alex, there was a third voice in there.
Yep, that's Will, our special guest.
Brilliant, Will. Can you introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm the number 7 that Eddie Jones always wanted. Hang on, I can't say that.
You can. It's in Slotty's script.
Will Fraser, thank you very much for coming back to the Ruck. You were so warmly received by people last time that we wanted to get you back. And it's a great time to have you back with the end of the European group stages. Saracens have been through an amazing trough and out the other side, we think. Will, for those who aren't entirely sure, is not a Saracens player anymore, retired in the summer, but is still very much on the inside. You were working for Saracens doing?
So for the Saracens Way, so a programme where we look at how what we've done off the pitch at Saracens in terms of the culture, how we treat people, our values, how we can transfer that into any organisation. We do it through a series of workshops and other bits and bobs. So I've been very fortunate that I've been given a brilliant role at the club.
And you still pretty much got a bird's eye view on what's been happening.
Yeah. Still see the boys all the time. Still go and sit in on a few team meetings. Sort of a proper lingerer at the moment. I just turn up and I hide in the corner of team meetings and try and listen to what's going on. So it's been an interesting time, as you say. So it's been quite interesting for me doing what I do now.
Excellent. So this is Monday morning. Would it be fair to say that yesterday afternoon you were in front of the TV crapping yourself like the rest of the team?
Yeah, or? Screaming at Leicester to kick for goal at the
Jesus,
end.
They let you down, didn't they?
I mean, to be fair, if I was in their position, I would have gone for a try 100%, but I was just praying. I was screaming, saying, please just kick for goal. I don't need to sit through another 80 minutes wondering whether or not we're going to go through. And as it turns out, luckily, Wasps did a job for us.
Yeah, so Wasps rescued Saracens effectively by beating Ulster and knocking Ulster out. Saracens got through. Alex, did you think at one point there was going to be zero English clubs?
Yeah, I did. Well, I did after the Leicester game, where I didn't think they were going to win, but right at the end there, the draw would have done enough for Saracens. And then I couldn't see Quinns beating La Rochelle and going in to the Wasps Ulster game. I thought that was tight. I thought that was the best chance that the Saracens had of someone doing them a favour. And then when the conditions were what they were, muddy and wet and cold, I wondered quite what Mark McCall must have been thinking at home watching on television, but Wasps managed to defy those conditions and they did brilliantly and did not only did Saracens a favour, but did English rugby a favour, because it would have been mightily embarrassing for the Premiership had none of their clubs qualified.
One thing that slightly surprised me after, you'd have a take on this, Will, is Dai Young was, we were saying, so how do you feel that all you've achieved by this good victory over Ulster is you've helped your rival Saracens get through to the quarterfinals? And he was very much, don't see it like that. We are English clubs and we like to help, we are rivals in the Premiership, but we see ourselves as a team effectively, which you know, slightly raise some eyebrows. Mm. Is that how you see it? If Saracens couldn't get through, would you be really happy if Wasps or Harlequins or whoever did instead?
I think, as you say, Alex, it's just good for English rugby to have an English club there. So, but they wouldn't have gone into that game saying, you know what, if Leicester lose, let's win this for Saracens. Let's win this game so we can put Saracens through. You know, everyone, you play rugby because, well, for one of the many reasons you play rugby is because you want to win. You go into every game and you want to win regardless of what possible outcomes that could mean for other teams. And I think what the nice byproduct was of the back of them winning was that an English club has gone through and we can sort of now try and fly the flag for the Premiership in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So, well, you are, Saracens are flying the flag. So just go through those quarterfinals. So by dint of finishing eighth, Saracens draw Leinster away, who won six out of six, the only club to win six out of six. Clermont play Racing, the two French teams. Munster at home to Toulon, and a real cracker of a game, Scarlets at home against La Rochelle. So it's a bit weird that Leinster's reward, if you like, for getting six out of six is to draw Saracens, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's, I mean, they must have seen it coming. They would have known that if Saracens were going to creep through, they'd probably end up hosting them at the Aviva Stadium. It makes for a hell of an occasion, but they've been through a tough time. As you know, Will's been part of it, and he's just talked about the culture. They're a team who've built a resilience about them. They've bounced back, and by the time they get to this game, they could have Billy Vunipola back, Charlotte Britt's back, and maybe even Michael Rhodes back if the hamstring injury is not quite as bad as some people fear. And so, your reward for going unbeaten through the pool stages and being top seeds is to host the double champions, who will be nearing full strength by then.
So, Will, what's on Saracens and everything that's happened the last two and a bit months? Mm. They went into that phase of seven in a row,
I think, yeah.
Seven defeats in a row, and after six, it was like, what's going on? After the seventh, it was, is this a crisis? And then Mark McCall, as we said, judge us at the end of January. And here we are in January, and they've won all but one of their games in that period.
He said they were in a bit of trouble at that point. And I think on the Monday, the day after that Clermont defeat at home, which was just bizarre the way that it was so un-Saracens-like. And that, you know, everything that has been created at that club was built on that defence and the hunger to make tackles. And they were missed 37 tackles that day. Now, you all know more, but the players gathered for lunch the next day without any coaches around and had a big kind of heart-to-heart and thrashed out some home truths, I think. I mean, that must have been the first time in a while where that's been needed. And what was going wrong? What was the trouble at the time that they managed to kind of put the finger on and solve?
Well, the really interesting thing is, when we say in the start, with sport, it's you're always going to get a period at some point where you're going to lose a few games or things aren't going to go well. And we've had a few over the last few years, but it's been never more than a couple back-to-back or one here and a few weeks later another one. So in terms of for the actual group of players at the moment, it's the first time any of them really have ever been in a situation like that where you've had so many defeats back-to-back where things just aren't working for whatever reason. So what it came down to, the meeting after the Clermont game at home and in Spark on the Monday night when we got thrashed, that meeting, looking at what's going wrong, actually wasn't about the rugby. We didn't really talk about the rugby at all. It was about more of the cultural side of it. So remembering why we do what we do, remembering what we've built over the last 8 years, going back to basics a little bit in terms of that side of it. And then off the back of that week, talking to some of the boys, it was a heavily player-led week in terms of, right, what do we want to get out of this week? What do we want to get out of this game at Clermont away? Because you're going off the back of one of the worst defeats the club's ever had at home, and then you've got to go to Clermont, where when we've been at our best, we've not got a victory. And actually what they said, they took the exact same approach to the cultural side of it as they did to the rugby. So they basically went and said, right, let's just go back to basics. What makes a good Saracens performance? It's being physical, it's being hungry, it's working hard, it's putting in a shed load of effort, showing loads of energy. And actually, I think in many ways, although we lost the game at Clermont, when you look at it from a performance point of view, I mean, actually, we probably should have won as well.
I was at that game. I thought it was a pretty impressive performance from Saracens.
I think it was, even without what had gone the 7 weeks previous, it was an impressive performance. So I think that was a huge turning point in terms of just going back to what we're good at. What defines a proper Saracens performance?
Who would have arranged a lunch?
I would have been the lads. So it would have been Brad or one of the senior guys would have put it on the WhatsApp group that everyone has nowadays and just said, right, lads, we're meeting here at this time, come down. And again, you know, it wasn't, the premise of it wasn't necessarily it was just going back to the core part of what we're about as a group, which is the friendships and relationships, and actually in a time like that, going and having a beer together and just chatting away, then naturally conversations will end up.
Why would you have gone away from that? I mean, you hadn't stopped being close friends, or
no. It's not that, I don't think it's that we've gone away from it. We still do all that, but I think that, you know, the point was made was that because where we are now from a performance point of view is a lot higher than where we were 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
It's just making sure that we don't focus so much on that and not bring the other side up with it. So it's like, you know, if there's a balance in scales, you know, maybe we'd gone a bit heavy on the performance side and not the other side. Was the chat from the thing?
But to me, it still seems a weird thing, and maybe a brilliant thing in a way, that your response to a bad defeat is to go and have lunch and talk about the fact that we're really good friends and that's what counts. I mean, and that you say, everyone says that was the essential point of the turnaround. Yeah. I mean, that sounds weird.
Yeah.
But it is.
But it's true.
But it's true.
I mean, obviously, don't get you wrong. There were obvious bits specifically with the rugby that needed to be looked at. But that
don't miss 37 tackles.
But that wasn't the fundamental reason why we'd lost, why we'd been on a bad run. But yeah, but that's been our sort of USP, if you like, over the last 8-9 years, is exactly that, is the friendships and making memories together and all that kind of stuff. And that then manifests itself on the pitch with the proper Saris performances. So I think going back to that, and actually whenever we've been through a little bad patch, that's always been the way we've reacted. We've always got together and met up somewhere as a group and just enjoyed each other's company. And as I say, naturally, especially after a few beers, you boys will talk about rugby. But I suppose the good thing about that is then you get proper, honest conversations about how people generally feel at the moment. And if you can get that and actually understand where someone's head is at and they understand where you're at, that's when you can then actually get learning conversations and then build on it and get back to where you need to be.
And going back to Slotty's question about it not being much of a reward for Leinster to face Saracens, do you think, having been through that and having almost replenished all those things that they needed to look at, that actually that tough run will make them even more dangerous to come the business end of the season.
100%.
They'll go to Leinster not only with some players back, quite possibly, but with a real kind of hunger and a recent reminder of what it's like when it goes wrong.
Yeah, I think I definitely think so. I think come the end of the season, in a year's time, 2 years time, whatever, we'll look back at that period and we'll actually, we'll actually be almost a bit grateful for it, because it's almost like pressing the reset button a little bit. And actually, when you go through those, as long as you learn from it and you can take things from it, then actually it's very beneficial. And I think going through that and then sneaking into the quarterfinals, I think Leinster away is actually the perfect quarterfinal for us. You know, you're going into the Lions Den, the Aviva, against a team that gone unbeaten this year in Europe. And actually, if you look back on history, they're the games that the boys really thrive in. And as a club, they're the games where we properly come out. I mean, you look at when we played Munster in the semi-finals last year at the Aviva. You know, same sort of thing. So I think that is probably, for us, a perfect game to propel the rest of that sort of European campaign.
If there's any player that kind of epitomises that mindset of loving to step into the hostile surroundings, it would be Owen Farrell. Who was picked out for praise by Mark McCall at the weekend, not just for the way he played against Northampton in that, when Saracens had to go and do everything they could, put themselves in position, 7 tries, put 50 over 50 on Northampton for the third time this season, and I think Farrell kicked 27 points, but he actually said he pinpointed the role he'd had in that 6 weeks.
Yeah,
what does a senior player like Owen do beyond what just turning up for training and giving his all on the pitch to help kind of generate that turnaround? What kind of role do they have?
I think a lot of it with Owen is he's incredibly passionate and knowledgeable about the game, and he's incredibly passionate about the group as well, and everyone, you know, getting to be as good as they can be. So I think with him, one, he leads by example massively in terms of the training, his attitude around the place during the week. Obviously, on game day, he's just in a world of his own. And then what he says is so clear and honest that it really, there's no beating around the bush. There's no, you know, you. I can't speak on behalf of any other clubs, but what you'd imagine sometimes is people try and skirt around what the real issue is or try and kind of sugarcoat things. With Owen, he's brilliantly honest, and he does it in a way where actually you know that he's doing it because he just wants us to be better.
He's a bit scary as well, though, isn't he?
Well, I don't think so.
But if you mess up in training, he'll kill you, won't he?
No, he's there. I promise you, Owen is there. Owen wants people to get better. That's what all he wants.
But his standards are so high. Isn't that the time when he'll lose it if people aren't attaining the appropriate standards in training?
Well, he doesn't. I've never seen him lose it in training.
All right.
He'll say, if you don't know, for example, and it's not Owen, I was the exact same. If you're training and someone's in the wrong place because they've not done their homework and actually sat down and learnt where they're meant to be, that's different, because that's sort of an unwritten rule between the group. That's entirely on your head individually to know that, to do your learning and do your work. So that's different. If it's a case of dropping a ball or slightly running the wrong line or whatever, then he'll just say, you know, it's encouragement. It's trying to pick you up and just say, you know, just run this on here. And to be honest, you'd be an idiot not to listen to it, because he's world class. So if he's telling you something, 100%, you've probably done the wrong thing. That's why he's telling you.
Do you think that he could be a coach tomorrow if his foot fell off or something?
100%.
Because that's what people say, he's like a coach as a
player.
He could
be, whether or not he wants to. But he could.
He behaves easily. Conducts himself like a coach, doesn't
but
he?
But he just knows, his knowledge of the game is phenomenal. Like, it's, you sit down and watch a game with him, and you, I mean, not a Sarri's game, it would be any game, and you'll be talking through it, and he just sees things that no one else would see and all that kind of stuff. So it's, he definitely could be 100%.
I think England use him like that already. Mm. I think Eddie Jones has said he'll send off George Ford and Owen Farrell to go and do some analysis on the opposition, and they'll come back quite often having seen things Eddie hasn't seen. And England have a defence coach and a forwards coach and a scrum coach, but they haven't got a backs coach.
No.
Eddie does it, and I'm sure he does it in conjunction with Owen and George because of exactly that. They see things, and their attention to detail is so...
Yeah.
It means that they're spotting opportunities and ways of breaking down
100%. And I think, you know, if you've got players like that, you'd be a fool not to use them in that way, because, as you say, they're the ones on the pitch seeing these things. They're the ones that have to make those decisions. And not every player. I think it's actually quite rare to get players who are that way inclined. But in more ways than one, Faz is just, as I say, he's just one of a kind, really, in so many ways, and that's definitely one of them. And as a club, well, and as a country, as a national side, I think we've benefited tenfold from him.
Just to rewind a bit to the Saracens 14, Clermont 46 day that sort of that started all this this conversation. At that time, did you have confidence, or as a fan and a teammate, effectively, or as close as you were to it, were you perturbed by it? Were you concerned by it, or did you just think, "Oh, we're going to come through this"? It was, as you say already, it was such a long run and such a bad defeat, such an uncharacteristic defeat.
I always thought we were going to come through it, 100%. But that doesn't mean I wasn't surprised or a bit, perturbed, as you said. I mean, it's just, as you say, I mean, the difference was that Clermont home game. The games before were all kind of by one or two points, and you could really pinpoint, from a rugby point of view, why we'd lost those games. But that Clermont game was just, it was like a few years ago, and I was actually playing in it, and Wasps put 60 points on us at Allianz Park. It's a couple of years ago now. It's just one of those complete anomaly performances. But because it was off the back of five other defeats, and unlike the Wasps one where we'd won every game and then suddenly that happened, there was obviously something more than just the rugby going on.
Mm.
But I always thought we'd come through it because, you know, you look at the players we've got and the lads we've got and the culture we've built over the last 8-9 years, that doesn't just suddenly disappear.
Is it official? Are they through it now? And have you got a certificate saying that it's over?
Not yet. No, we're still waiting on the certificate. It's a lot of bureaucracy with that sort of stuff, so we've got to wait for it all to...
Officially as a crisis.
No, I think I think we are. I mean, you look how we played against Northampton, you look at...
Well, I thought Northampton was... It seemed to be like the game that you should have had the certificate presented at.
But if you think in terms of we had to go into that game and get a bonus point, so the added pressure of actually going and having to play, a lot of times that actually goes against you because you try and play too much. I mean, if you look at the start of the game, when we had a penalty in their half, and actually we've kicked 3 points rather than go for the corner, even though we needed the 5 points, because we understand that actually that's not how we play. If we're going to win this game with a bonus point, we just have to play how we play.
That quarter final, are you backing your boys?
I'm backing. I'm not going to talk too far ahead of that, but I'm backing us. Yeah, I think that is such a great game for us because it's just everything about it. You have to say it's away quarter final. It's going to be in front of a packed Aviva against the form team in Europe this year. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's going to be bloody hard. It's going to be an absolute battle, but I think that's a great game for us.
Do you know it's Easter weekend and you haven't had an Easter weekend off?
No, don't worry. I'm already trying to plan the
trip.
You're
going to do it. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I was just trying to find out when do they release what day it's going to be on.
It's later this week, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm going to try my best to get out there 100%.
Saracens, Leinster, and then not another English club as we mentioned. So could we put to you, this is a debate that's been rattling around ever since round three, actually, of the pool stages. 2 years ago, there were five English clubs in the quarterfinals, and now there's one. So is there a reason? Is this sport and it's a cyclical thing, or is there something more systemic to the way English clubs are prepared and going just hammer and tongs week after week? And
I'd lean more at the moment towards just the cyclical side of it, because I think it almost goes every sort of 2-3 years you'll get one nation that kind of dominates the quarterfinals. So there's a big period where it was a lot of the French teams, then you had Leinster, Munster, Ulster were all basically guaranteed quarterfinalists at one point. You had a period early on where Ospreys and Cardiff would always be there or thereabouts. And then the English teams came through, so I think at the moment it is more cyclical. There's that underlying debate that's been sort of going, especially this year, of international boys particularly playing a lot of rugby. Does that then show itself in the club game?
Because do you think it does?
I'd say, well, I can only talk on behalf of the lads that I know at the club, and I think from how they're playing, because they're all with us and all playing fantastic rugby. That sounds like I'm bad-mouthing everyone else, but the guys at the club are very good at managing the lads, so they have been away. They're very good at managing them back in and giving them the time they need, and which could be why actually they're still playing well.
Where are you, Alex, on this at the moment?
Well, it's not just Saracens, but you had a lot of Lions, but we had a table in the paper over the weekend, which I've just pulled up here, of the minutes played by players in the Premiership compared to those in the top 14, and the top 10 of that list are all in the Premiership. Laws, Watson, Joseph, Cole, Haskell, Cruz, Farrell, Mako, Vinopola, Itoji, George. You got to get to number 11 until you get to Justin Tipperick, Carl Sinclair, 12, then Halfpenny, Joe Marler. So the stats bear out that the Premiership players do have to play more.
And then I thought that was a brilliant piece of work, because even when you get into the top, into the Pro 14 teams, you get into the Welsh players first, and then the Irish players finally kick in. You know, they play like half an hour each or something.
Yeah, who's the first Irishman? Ian Henderson, 423 minutes. And Courtney Laws, 815.
Yeah, and Johnny Sexton is on like about 200 or something. I don't think
246 minutes before the last weekend's of Europe. So I mean, just statistically, they are being asked to play more. That has to have a bearing. You looked at that before round four of Europe, was it? Where
before round three of Europe was it? Yeah, that was round three of Europe. For instance, Exeter played Leinster, and that big game down at Sandy Park where Leinster did a really impressive job on them. And Exeter didn't play badly, but Leinster just did a great job on them. And you looked at the week before, pretty much the same 14 of the 15 were playing against Leinster. But the previous weekend, Leinster had given pretty much the whole team the day off. So they were all 2 weeks fresh. I'm sure that must make a
difference. It's hard, though, that isn't it? Because you could argue some players would rather not have a weekend off before a big European game. They'd rather play the week before because they want to get into it. And so I suppose that's very much down to the individual. But I mean, I haven't actually seen those stats, and that's, I mean, 815 minutes, that's mental.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a... You know, there's probably numerous reasons as to why only one English team's made it through this year. Then it could be as simple as it's just a cyclical thing.
Yeah, I doubt it won't be one specific thing. There'll be
loads of things.
There'll be elements to it. Yeah, the draw chance.
Yeah.
Are the teams playing particularly well?
And so many of them were close, weren't they? I mean, Wasps should have done it, but they erred for 20 minutes at Quinns. Bath, and so this is where we turn to you, Alex, isn't it? What did you say in the first week of Europe when Bath failed to get their bonus point against Benetton at home?
I did suggest that they would regret that bitterly, and I was argued down on the basis that Benetton are quite a good team, which they are, but they will now regret that bitterly because it would have helped them get through.
And you displayed great wisdom there, which was underappreciated at the time.
It doesn't happen very often, so when I remember saying something that turned out to be true, I have to...
Well done, you.
I have to flag it up.
last thing on Saracens. So talking about maybe, hopefully, that a lot of the players will be fit again for that Leinster game. Billy obviously came back after a knee injury. He played one awesome game against Wasps, and everyone's going, you know, wow, the boy's back.
Yeah.
Then he gets half a game the following week and fractures a forearm. Mm. So he's now on a really miserable run of injuries, which unfortunately is something you can relate to pretty well because that's what, you know, dogged the latter part of your career. Have you seen much in the last sort of few months? How is he? Is he sort of personality that will be resilient to this? Because at some stage, you all know as well as anyone. Sorry, could keep on saying that, but
no, that's fine.
It's just a misery.
Yeah, I think it is, and it will be. Billy is a very positive guy. He's always been a very positive guy, so that naturally will help. I think in the environment we're in at the club, everyone's very good at sort of picking up on little things, body language bits or whatever it is, and very good at, you know, rallying round and if there's anything that they can do for you, all that kind of stuff. So that will help. But a lot of it does come down to sort of you individually. And Bill's had a rough old time of it the last sort of year, really. You think he missed a Lions tour as well because he went and had shoulder surgery. So it's been rough on him. But I think, you know, he'll still be back before the end of the season. And I think that'll be a big thing for him, the fact that he can still get some rugby in. He'll still be able to play in the business end, so hopefully be back for this Leinster game and if we win, obviously, the semi-final. Summer tour as well. So I think he's still back. There's still a huge amount of rugby for him to play when he comes back, which will massively help his mindset with it all. And he'll be finding this out for the first time if you listen to this, but I'm going to get him down and help me a lot of my workshops, so I'll keep him busy with that. So
he'll be delighted to hear that.
Oh, he'll be over the moon, absolutely over the moon. I think he's. I haven't seen him for a week or so, but I think he'll. Yeah, he's got a lot of good people around him.
Do you do your workshops in the afternoons? Because he likes to nap in the afternoon, doesn't he?
If Billy's going to help, I can tailor it for him. So right, I'm sure we can
around,
start
around his sleeping.
We can start in the afternoon. That's fine. Yeah.
Excellent. We'll be back in a minute.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to The Ruck. Will, if you weren't in Dublin on Easter weekend for the Leinster Saracens game, where would you be?
Part Scarlets, watch Scarlets La Rochelle.
Definitely. I think Munster Toulon could be a belter. But yes, Scarlets La Rochelle's got just... It's already, people are already excited about it being one of the great European occasions. Two attack-minded teams willing to have a go from anywhere who've really lit up the tournament this year. I'm not sure Parky Scarlets will be quite big enough to host all the people who are going to want to go to it.
Well, it's told they might have to move it.
They can't move it to the Millennium Stadium, don't think, because Anthony Joshua's got in there first.
Oh, that's very selfish.
Yeah.
Favourite players from the pool stages? Well, I'll start because we're on Scarlets at the moment. So the game I enjoyed the most was when Scarlets gave Bath a complete roasting at the Wreck. And I loved watching, well, Gareth Davis is sort of one of the little stars I've really enjoyed. James Davis and Reece Patchell, I thought, just quality, all of them. Great fun to watch. Brilliant players.
Yeah, I had James Davis as well. He's a sort of a later developer. He's a kind of a bit of a wild character, which is a great thing for the game, to have characters and personalities like his. Sort of burst onto the scene, really, through the Sevens set-up and... GB Sevens won a silver medal at the Olympic Games and has come back and forced his way into the Wales squad with a series of just outstanding performances. And he's the type of seven who really fits the way that they play, because he's aggressive over the ball and tough at the breakdown, but he's a really good link man as well, and just fits the way they play at the Scarlets.
So I've gone for actually one from La Rochelle, so Bottia, the Fijian 7/centre.
Whatever he fancies that.
Purely for the reason that he can do that. I think he's just, you talk about a physical specimen and someone that can do something from nothing.
But when you were a 7, you played centre from time to time, didn't you? No. You didn't.
I played centre back at under 10. Yeah, but after that.
7/centre.
Yeah, I sort of went from centre straight to prop and then managed to work myself out to the back row. I just think he's, I've gone for him. And then Raka at Claremont, 23-year-old, would you believe? But we obviously felt firsthand the full force of him.
Got a hat trick against you, didn't he?
I mean, again, you give him the ball, and it's like watching. It's like, you know, you used to watch play at school, and you see the opposition come. They had that one massive fella, and you're just thinking, Christ, if he gets the ball, we're in trouble. And for Claremont, Rack is that guy. So
he's the other colour player. That's why they bring in size. Rugby, weight grade rugby in New Zealand rather than age grade rugby. Because to avoid the massive unit coming and skittling everyone.
It's ridiculous. It doesn't defy logic to be that size and to not only just be able to run that fast, but actually to have a bit of footwork as well. And he's Fijian, so he can obviously offload the ball pretty averagely. So he's both of them just phenomenal athletes.
Two other players who caught my eye. James Ryan, the Leinster lock, who's a real up-and-coming second row in Ireland, who's got a big, big, big future ahead of him. And you've got the pronunciation that Chris...
Kluter.
The Munster flanker, who's come out of nowhere. And there's one moment which has stuck in my mind from covering the Leicester-Munster game when Johnny May made a break, chipped ahead. Johnny May, quickest player in England, scored probably in the Premiership, chased it down. And just as he got to it, Chris Kluter was there as well. Just came out of nowhere, and I think he's had a really big impression on Munster, and just caught my eye this season.
Okay, and finally, while we have the benefit of number 7 in our presence, Let's talk about England and the forthcoming Six Nations. Seven is the position that Eddie's just not nailed down. He hasn't been helped by injury, but he's been desperately looking for a young player to play a traditional seven role coming through. He's had Haskell playing a sort of six type seven, but Haskell has struggled for form this year and is now suspended back in for the Scotland game, I think. Sam Underhill is just about fit. Chris Robshaw, Eddie's talked about putting him back in on the other side. In the squad, you've also got Gary Graham, who's this Newcastle player who's only arrived in Newcastle from Jersey this season, so he's made a fast breakthrough. And then injured, but also clearly interesting, is the Sale teenager, Tom Curry. I mean, can you pick your way through that, Will, and tell us who's going to be the World Cup winner at seven for England?
I can't go that far, but I suppose it depends. For me, a lot of it depends on who he's going to pick at six and eight.
Sure.
As to who you have at seven. So, obviously, had Billy been fit, no doubt he would have been starting number eight. Then, because you've got Billy, you can put someone like Sam Underhill or Curry, for example, if he was fit, at seven, because they're the ones that are, you know, Sam Underhill especially, his chop tackling is ridiculous. He can get over the ball. He gives you that side of it. But maybe not as much on the carrying side as some other lads will give you. But because you've got Billy there, you don't need that.
Yeah.
It's all about that balance. And then obviously you've got options as, do you move Marrow, keep Marrow at six, or do you put Courtney at six? Or, you know, how do you deal with that whole situation? Then Simmons, obviously, you stick him at eight and he gives you a good bit of go forward as well. So it's tricky. I think for me it depends more who he wants to put at six and eight as to who you put. You put at seven, and then you know Robbo's going to come in and do a phenomenal job for you wherever he plays, just because he's an incredibly just consistent player. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen him have a bad game, to be honest. So then you've got that option there as well. It's not a nailed down position, but in many ways I don't necessarily see it as a bad thing, because there's plenty of options. If it wasn't nailed down and we had zero options, then you're in a bit of trouble. But we've got plenty of options there. And if you think then you've got Billy to come back into it, and he's looking at Zach Mertes in the squad as well as another potential option. I mean, there's loads of ways you can play with it. I think it's, you'd hope that after this season, obviously then going into the World Cup, by the end of the Six Nations or the summer tour, there's more of a clear picture as to what that back row is going to look like. But I don't see it as a bad thing at the moment. But
out of the new generation, Underhill, Simmons, Zach Mercer, you mentioned, Tom Curry, Gary Graham, I know they're sort of playing in different positions around the back row, but are there any of those that you've watched and you thought, blimey, that kid's got it?
I think Sam Underhill is a very good player. He reminds me of kind of like your Joe Worsley back in the day. He'll make a shed load of tackles, will never miss one. He'll get over the ball, do loads of hard work. Then Simmons, I think, is brilliant. I think he's been a bit of a revelation for Exeter over the last sort of season and a half. Tom Curry's good because he's, you know, they're not the biggest of blokes, but they get themselves about, good skills. Again, it's hard to pick one out of them because, to be honest, again, for me, it depends on who you've got as who you pick. But I think they're all very good, and they're all, you know, I can say it now because I don't play anymore, they're all bloody young, so they've all got sort of big futures ahead. So it'd be really interesting to see how that position, and to be honest, seven, even when I was playing, seven's been probably the most talked about position in England for the best
since Neil Back, isn't it?
Yeah, it really has, isn't it? Because the irony is that every year the seven position is defined in a new way, and now we've gone through a whole period of looking for a new kind of seven, and now everyone's talking about, we want an old school seven, you know, who's going to do that. So it's amazing, isn't it, really? Because it's probably the one position where you've got so many different ways of playing it. Like it's and that's because it depends so heavily on who else is in that back row with you. But as I say, we've got options, and we've got a lot of good players, a lot of good young players. So I think, you know, the future looks good in that position, whoever ends up taking the shirt.
Will, thanks so much for coming along today. We gave you a special new service by scripting the start of this programme, and it doesn't just end there, does it? Because we've now got an email address, and we've got a special coming up on Thursday where Steve Jones is in a Ruck special with Wayne Barnes, the referee. And I say, as I said, we have this new email address, theruck@thetimes.co.uk. So that makes communication simpler and easier. Please email all your views and tell us what you think, what you want us to talk about. We will be back next week. Thank you for joining us on The Ruck.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.